And if you're feeling it strong, cause if you're feeling it strong.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The Pentagon says its proposed budget will get the United States ready for possible confrontation with China. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Amid a growing alliance between China and Russia, including President Xi Jinping's visit to Moscow this week, the Pentagon says Chinese actions are concerning.
Moving it down the path towards confrontation and potential conflict with its neighbors. And possibly the United States.
Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin told a House panel the Pentagon's $842 billion spending pitch would help ensure the U.S. can deter China if needed by boosting capabilities in the Pacific and modernizing the force worldwide.
Preparation for war and deterring war is extraordinarily expensive, but it's not as expensive as fighting a war.
Sagar Magani at the White House.
German unions are calling for thousands of transport workers across the country to go on strike Monday. AP correspondent Karen Chalmers reports.
The one-day transport strike is expected to bring widespread disruption to planes, trains, and local transit. The announced strikes come as employees in many sectors have been seeking hefty raises to reflect persistently high inflation. Germany's annual inflation rate in February was 8.7%. One union, EBG, is calling for 230,000 workers at Germany's main railway operator, Deutsche Bahn, to go on strike. Deutsche Bahn's head of personnel called the EBG strike announcement completely excessive, unnecessary, and disproportionate. I'm Karen Chamas.
North Korea tested a new underwater nuclear attack drone designed to create a radioactive tsunami on enemy coast, state media claimed Friday. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Ukraine, asserting that Russia's attempt to capture Bakhmut has stalled, is now planning to launch a long-awaited counteroffensive very soon. That's according to Ukraine's top ground forces commander, Oleksandr Sursky. He said on the Telegram social media site that Russia's Wagner mercenaries, often convicts recruited out of prisons, are losing considerable strength and are running out of steam in trying to control Bakhmut. After considering a pullout in the eastern city, Ukraine kept its troops in place while also sending in reinforcements. Sursky said, "Very soon we will take advantage of this opportunity, as we did in the past." He said, naming cities Ukraine has defended or captured from Russian control. U.S. President Joe Biden will address the Canadian Parliament on Friday, a day after the United States and Canada reached a deal aimed at stopping asylum seekers from crossing the shared land border via unofficial crossings, though some details still need to be ironed out, according to an official that spoke with Reuters. The revised Safe Third Country Agreement will be discussed on Friday at an official meeting between Biden and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in Ottawa, with the announcement likely afterward. Trudeau has been under pressure to stop the flow of asylum seekers in Quebec, the mainly French-speaking province where he holds his parliamentary seat. Human rights activists say Uganda's passage of an anti-homosexuality bill could be an impetus for similar far-reaching legislation across Africa as anti-gay sentiments grow. More than 30 African states already have laws that ban same-sex relationships. Five boys had to be rescued after entering a street tunnel in New York City. To get more from Norman Hall.
Five boys, ages 11 and 12 years old, crawled through a storm drain tunnel on Staten Island. After walking around, they couldn't find their way back to the entrance point. Despite all the concrete and being below street level, their 911 call made it through.
What's the address of Staten Island?
We don't know.
You don't know?
Oh, yeah, we're stuck in the sewers.
You're stuck where?
In the sewers.
Dispatchers used a low-tech method for responders to pinpoint their location.
Call for help, guys. They hear you. Call for help.
They were rescued after about an hour in the tunnel. None had significant injuries. I'm Norman Hall.
As always, details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. Also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I am James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 24, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ethiopian Prime Minister appoints the spokesperson for Tigrayan forces as regional head.
Basically, it's mandatory. It's part of the peace process that TPLF led this war for 2 years. And then as part of the negotiation, TPLF is supposed to hand over power to interim government.
We'll get analysis from an official of the Oromo movement in the U.S. Officials say infant and maternal mortality rates in South Sudan remain worrying. Today, Friday, is World Tuberculosis Day, as the WHO says the disease remains the world's deadliest killer.
Actions and investments still fall far short of those needed to end the TB epidemic. 2023 is a pivotal year to push forward the agenda towards ending TB.
And Uganda launches self-testing kits for HIV/AIDS. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ethiopia's prime minister has appointed the spokesperson of the Tigray People's Liberation Front as head of an interim administration in the Tigray region. The appointment is the latest sign of progress in the peace deal that ended the two-year war between the government and the TPLF in November of last year. Miami Seeker reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has named a spokesperson of the TPLF to lead the northern Tigray region's new interim administration. Getachew Reda's appointment was announced in a Twitter message from the Prime Minister's office Thursday. The interim regional administration will be in place until elections are held for the region. The peace deal signed between the two warring parties in November has resulted in the halt of open conflict and a handover of heavy weapons from Tigrayan forces to the federal government. The federal government has resumed essential services to the region and opening of aid corridors. The government dropped its designation of the TPLF as a terrorist organization on Wednesday after lawmakers approved the decision by a majority vote. Getachew Reda, along with other Tigrayan officials, had been charged with terrorism under the designation. Ethiopian media reports say those charges are expected to be lifted, though they have yet to be formally discontinued. A TPLF spokesperson was not immediately available to comment. Rights groups have accused all sides of committing war crimes during the two-year war, including the TPLF, Ethiopia's federal government, and Eritrean and regional Amhara forces who fought on the side of the government. Maya Misikut for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Some Ethiopians are welcoming the appointment of Getachew Reda as the leader of the new interim administration of the country's northern Tigray region. Getachew was the spokesperson of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, during the nearly two-year civil war between the TPLF and the Ethiopian federal government. Some have described him as the most appropriate person for the job. Dr. Dereji Hawass is a member of the Oromo movement here in the United States. He tells me that the establishment of an interim administration for Tigray and Getachew as the leader is all in fulfillment of the 2022 peace agreement signed last year in South Africa.
As you recall, the Ethiopian federal government and the leaders in the war-torn Tigray region signed the peace accord on 2nd of November, as you recall. So as part of that agreement, some of the major implementations included the establishment of the transitional Tigray government in the north. So it's in that Getachew Reda became the president of the interim government.
What does the appointment of Getachew mean for the peace process that you described?
So basically, it's mandatory. It's a demand part of the peace process that TPLF led this war for 2 years. And then as part of the negotiation, TPLF is supposed to hand over power to interim government, and the interim government facilitates future regional elections that will bring a permanent local government to Tigray. Then now, for this process, of course, it is mandatory and it has to be fulfilled. But then, as you know, there are many, many other issues surrounding this peace process. The election being just one of them, the establishment of the regional government, the interim government being one of them. There are other very important things like the Western Tigray and the Southern Tigray regions that are now currently, the Tigrayans claim, is occupied by the Amhara forces, and then to the north by the Eritreans, have to be returning to them, and all forces outside of the federal government supposed to be leaving Tigray as it's mandated, the territory mandated by the constitution. and also all kind of economical issues, the opening of all social services, the opening of all internet and some banking services. And also, as Americans are now repeatedly demanding the justice or the accountability to atrocities and all that. So all this is part of the criteria to fulfill this peace agreement. So this just becomes one of the fulfillment as far as this establishing the local government.
As you mentioned about the U.S. demanding accountability, there was an article on Thursday. The title is that Ethiopia scraps bid to end UN ordered Tigray abuses investigation early. I wonder if you understand what I said.
Yes. I do understand. It was, I think, about a month or so ago that Ethiopia filed this motion at the UN, and all the rights agencies opposed it, including the United States, and that didn't go through. So that's why Ethiopia is withdrawing from it. And as you recall, just a few days ago, the Secretary of State of the United States, Secretary Blinken, visited Ethiopia and met with Prime Minister Abiy and also with Mr. Getachew from Tigray. And that the statement that came out of State Department says that for those 2 years of atrocities, the Ethiopian National Army or the Ethiopian government, the Amhara region forces, Eritrea, and also the TPLF forces are responsible or need to be accountable after proper investigation by United Nations other parties. So that is probably why Ethiopia withdrew from it, as you just said.
Dr. Hawass, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Dereji Hawass is a member of the Oromo movement here in the United States. He was speaking with us from Philadelphia. At least 4,100 people lose their lives to tuberculosis, and an estimated 30,000 people around the world fall ill with the disease each year. The World Health Organization says global efforts to combat TB have saved an estimated 74 million lives since the year 2000. In Africa, there has been a 35% reduction in tuberculosis deaths since 2015. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
World Health Organization, WHO, says that for the first time in over a decade, TB deaths increased in 2020 during the COVID-19 pandemic. This year, the theme of the World TB Day is Yes, We Can End TB. It aims to inspire hope and encourage high-level leadership and to increase investments and the uptake of new recommendations to combat the disease. The director of WHO's Global TB Program, Teresa Kaseiva, says action is needed to ensure the end of TB.
Other crises and socioeconomic inequities has reversed years of progress made in the fight to end TB. Actions and investments still fall far short of those needed to end the TB epidemic. 2023 is a pivotal year to push forward the agenda towards ending TB.
Millions of people around the world suffer and die from tuberculosis, a preventable, treatable, and curable disease. In Africa, TB infections since 2015 have fallen by 22%. Countries like Eswatini, Kenya, Mozambique, South Sudan, Togo, Uganda, and Zambia have reduced deaths by 35%. Meshidi Somoeti is the WHO's regional director for Africa.
An estimated 1 million people are living with TB in the region, yet to be detected. There's a well-known link between TB and HIV. Approximately 20% of people newly diagnosed with TB are also living with HIV infection. We are fighting multidrug-resistant TB. In the African region, just over a quarter of all people living with multidrug resistance are receiving the appropriate treatment.
Moeti says new drugs and vaccines offer hope in ending TB, though political commitment and financial resources are needed to achieve that.
Over the past decade, we've seen a notable progress in Eastern and Southern Africa. Our member states are increasing the uptake of new tools and guidance recommended by WHO, resulting in early access to TB prevention and care and better outcomes. The use of rapid diagnostic testing has increased, improving countries' ability to detect and diagnose new cases of the disease.
The International Medical Humanitarian Organization, Doctors Without Borders, is calling on governments and donors to speed up access to new, shorter, safer, and more effective treatments for drug-resistant tuberculosis. Kaseiva says in December, new WHO guidelines recommended countries to roll out a safer and shorter treatment that will help people with drug-resistant TB.
We are putting the spotlight on the importance of tackling health inequalities to ensure health for all. People with TB are among the most marginalized and vulnerable, facing barriers in accessing care and stigma and discrimination.
According to UNAIDS, people living with HIV are up to 18 times more likely to develop TB compared to those without HIV. Health experts say increased efforts and commitments from countries, partners, and donors are vital in accelerating progress to end tuberculosis. And they say early detections and effective treatment are vital to prevent deaths linked to the illness. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I am James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, March the 24th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. South Sudan still has the highest infant and maternal mortality rates in the world. The country's acting health minister says South Sudan has a long way to go to reducing the rates due to a lack of peace and stability. The United States, United Kingdom, and UNICEF are calling for more action, as we hear from Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
There are 1,150 deaths per 100,000 live births in South Sudan. Most of the deaths are due to infection, hemorrhage, and obstructed labor. Officials from the USAID, the United Kingdom, and UNICEF say while meaningful progress has been made in reducing maternal and under-5 deaths globally over the past 10 years, only a handful of countries are likely to meet the Sustainable Development Goal targets by 2030. The officials spoke during a press conference to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Global Maternal and Child Survival Call to Action. They say they are seeing extremely worrying rates of mortality for mothers and babies, especially in South Sudan, which is performing the worst globally. Jasper Moller is the UNICEF deputy country representative for South Sudan.
In South Sudan, while we see some progress, for example, in the impressive increases in women giving birth in the presence of a skilled health practitioner or in a health facility, we are still seeing 1 in 10 children dying before their 5th birthday, with a concentration of these deaths in the first month or the first year of life.
5 million children under the age of 5 die every year, and nearly half of those are newborns, and most of them die from preventable causes, says Mola, adding that in South Sudan there are climate-induced recurrent shocks such as flooding, drought, poverty, and conflict. He says South Sudan needs to strengthen primary health care systems and adopt an integrated approach that looks beyond clinical health care to improving water and sanitation, hygiene and nutrition, as well as reducing gender-based violence. Kate Crawford is with the USAID Global Maternal Child Nutrition Office. She says while progress has been made over the past 10 years, instability and weak national and state immunization systems continue to hinder those efforts.
South Sudan needs its leadership to stand by its people, ensure that peace and stability are here. I mean, we recognize the ministry and the parliament are not flush with funds, but you have to create an environment where private sector investment can come in. You have to create an environment where civil society can operate freely and engage in all the community work that needs to be done.
Healthy care in South Sudan is one of the least funded sectors by the government. The money allocated for health dropped from 9.7% in the 2021-2022 fiscal year budget to just 4.2% in 2022-2023 fiscal year budget. Member of Parliament Benjamin Malek Alier, a member of the Healthy Committee, says the executive dictate on the budget allocation and gives Parliament no opportunity to adjust the figures.
Although we started to increase it, when we ask, especially our members of the Parliament, the budget which is brought always is brought by the executive and they put a ceiling. So most of our attempts to increase the health budget don't go through, particularly last year.
Acting Health Minister Warile acknowledges the South Sudan situation of maternal and child deaths remains among the worst in the world. Warile says though the budget allocated to the health sector is too small to manage the magnitude of the problem, absence of peace and stability affects the government's efforts.
You will all agree with me, even if we have the best budget, even if we have the best plans or programs, without peace, where would we go?
Crawford says the call to action for maternal, newborn and child health initiative is to refocus attention on the needs of children and mothers. The U.S., the United Kingdom and UNICEF say improving the survival chances and quality of life of women, newborns and children remains an urgent global challenge. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
This month, Uganda launched a self-testing kit for HIV/AIDS that health officials say is a game changer in the fight against the spread of the disease. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakariji has more from Kampala, Uganda.
The new testing devices, dubbed Check Now, were launched by Uganda's Minister of Health. Geoffrey Tassi, the program officer for HIV testing services at Uganda's Minister of Health, he says the new kits will be user-friendly and effective in detecting HIV infections. Tassi says over the years, about 80% of those infected have been tested. He says there are several reasons as to why some people do not respond to HIV testing services. He calls it a game changer in the fight against HIV/AIDS.
They say they have no time. Others have stigma. Others, of course, their work, the schedules don't match with those of the hospitals, especially the public hospitals. And in the private sector, the testing, you know, is for money. You have to pay for it. Then we also have other populations that are not really, really easy to reach. Populations like female sex workers, like fishermen or fisher folk.
The health minister, Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng, says self-testing will help reach some populations that remain behind. These include children, adolescents, men and key population, including local motorcycle drivers, commonly known as border boarders. HIV/AIDS activist and counselor, Asasha Sovereign, welcomes the new initiative.
During counseling, some counselors, you find out that they ask some hard questions. For example, maybe it is a couple, then they are counseling you together, so they will ask a man, how many times have you had live sex, and how many women have you slept with? So those uncomfortable questions, and even to their females, sometimes they ask them those different questions, that how many times, how many partners have you slept with? You don't expect him to be so open, it might cause violence.
Experts say early detection of HIV helps in treatment. They also say it helps in prevention, as people who know their status tend to be more cautious. Tassi and Asasha say, unfortunately, some people, notably the youth, do not know the HIV status. The Uganda AIDS Commission estimates that about 60% have never been tested for HIV. Uganda's Minister of Health estimates that there's a 5.4% HIV prevalence rate in adults aged 15-49 years as of 2020. Tassi says the test can be conducted by either using saliva or blood samples.
When an individual does their own test, of course there are two results. If the result is negative, then it is negative. Yeah, the interpretation is that it's negative, and then they can seek prevention services. If the result is positive on the self-test, then they are encouraged to come to the health facility for additional testing, or what we call confirmatory testing, and then we can initiate treatment.
Tassi says the kits will be distributed in both public and private facilities for easy access. Health experts say Uganda is among four countries that are launching the use of kits, including Nigeria, Cameroon and South Africa. The World Health Organization says more than 38 million people are living with HIV/AIDS. According to Uganda's AIDS Commission, at least 1.4 million people are believed to be living with HIV/AIDS. Treatment and prevention of the disease heavily relies on donors, notably the Global Fund and United States President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with results from the 2023 AFCON qualifying matches played on Thursday. Ghana claimed a 1-0 win over Angola in the 2023 AFCON qualifying match played at the Baba Yara Stadium in Kumasi on Thursday evening. The narrow victory saw the Black Stars open a 3-point lead at the top of the group standings, while Palancras Nagres of Angola are placed third on the table with 3 matches left. The two teams are set to meet again at Estadio 11th in November in Luanda, where Angola will be banking on their home ground advantage against the Black Stars of Ghana. At the Levi Mwanawasa Stadium in Lusaka, Fashion Sakala and Lamek Banda proved to be the heroes for Zambia as the Chipolopolo recorded a 3-1 victory over Lesotho. In other AFCON qualifying results, the Central African Republic secured their first victory of the African Cup of Nations qualifying round by defeating Madagascar 3-0 in Antananarivo on Thursday. There are at least 9 matches to be played on Friday in the 2023 AFCON qualifying round. In cricket news, Zimbabwe captain Craig Evans' faith in spin paid off when Wesley Madhever took a hat-trick to set up a dramatic finish as Zimbabwe beat Netherlands by 1 run in the second of 3 World Cup Super League one-day internationals in Harare on Thursday. It went down to the last ball when last man Ryan Klein was run out attempting a near-impossible third run, which could have tied the match. The Netherlands were seemingly cruising in pursuit of Zimbabwe's 271 all out at 213 for 4 before off-spinner Madhave dismissed Colin Ackerman, Teja Nadamanaru and Paul van Makaren off the first 3 balls of the 44th over. In athletics news, transgender women will no longer be allowed to compete in female track and field events regardless of their levels of testosterone, according to World Athletics President Sebastian Coe, who announced on Thursday citing fairness over inclusion. Coe said no transgender athlete who had gone through male puberty will be permitted to compete in female world ranking competitions from the 31st of March. Speaking after a meeting of the Global Track and Field Federation's decision-making body, Sebastian Coe said World Athletics had consulted with stakeholders, including 14 national federations, the International Olympic Committee, and trans groups about the issue of transgender athletes. Staying with athletics, a team of 16 Kenyan veteran athletes will represent the country in Torun, Poland at the World Masters Indoor Athletics Championship from March 26 to April the 1st. Team captain Francis Cooley said they hope to inspire the younger generations of athletes in Kenya to run clean and to transit to retirement without problems. Athletes, he advised, should adhere to training instructions from their coaches and not look for shortcuts. And that's it on this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, March 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing you a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.